This is a Pinball News production.
I'd like to thank everybody for coming out. I'm going to move to the microphone in a minute. I wanted to show a video clip first, but allow me to introduce myself. My name is Brett Davis. I am the designer of all the PinScore products. You see them down there in the markup booth. Primarily doing LED-based displays for the Bali Stearns and Williams games. Also doing power supplies and doing other boards also as I continue getting more involved in the pinball community. The title of the presentation is What We Can't, Making Your Pinball LED Friendly. LEDs are starting to come out into the market and they're becoming very nice, reliable. They're starting to look better as the technology continues to improve. But we have to keep in mind that pinball machines were not designed for the LEDs. They were designed for incandescent bulbs. And so there's some fundamental electronics, issues in putting just an LED bulb in a slot or a socket for it that normally you'd take an incandescent bulb. Now, kind of like tell you a little bit more about where the market is going and where the technology is going. About a month ago, you could go ahead and go to the next slide, but don't start the video. About a month ago, Alex Pater, who is the editor-in-chief for ECN magazine, he did a small little YouTube video that I want to share some of that with you to kind of set the stage for why we need to be looking at, if we want to keep the games going, why we want to be ready to accept LEDs for what they are, where the future, where it's going. Go ahead and start it.
I'm Alex Paul, Editor-in-Chief of Electronic Component News, and today I'm going to talk about the disruptive technology of solid-state lighting. I say disruptive because we are in the middle of a sea change, going from vacuum tube, the last of the vacuum tube technologies, the CRT and the light bulb, to the new technology of solid-state lighting. Actually, the technology for solid-state lighting has been in existence for some time, but it's only now getting to the point where it can be properly commercialized. But for all intents and purposes, the light bulb might as well just be another vacuum tube on a curio shelf, because there may still be vacuum tubes in use in the household in the form of light bulb, but in a few years, especially given the fact that many governments are now banning light bulbs, the incandescent light bulbs, the light bulb will soon become a quaint novelty or a hoarding commodity, depending upon how you look at it. Solid state lighting that we are familiar with is, of course, the LED. Modern LEDs are at a brightness level and of a white level intensity to replace incandescence and fluorescence, but the marketplace hasn't yet gotten there. The products that you see on your shelves today are actually based on LED technology that is a couple of generations old. The latest LEDs that have been released today are only just now getting into the product. Whole aspect of solid state lighting will dramatically change the way we deal with things for multiple reasons. Number one, there's no glass. Number two, the technology, if properly implemented, is very robust and will last quite long. Solid state lighting has gotten to the point now where it is a viable challenger for incandescence. And you can even get white LEDs in various color temperatures, so you can actually modify the light required to suit the application at hand.
I chose this because I wanted to let you know where industry is going with LEDs. And this is just a small segment, some cuts, that more particularly pertain to the pinball industry when it comes to LED lighting. It's a much longer video. So in order to talk about LEDs, we need a little bit more understanding. So I'm going to give a little bit of electronics 101, particularly concerning LEDs. Now, most typical LEDs that we see in circuits, normally commercial circuits, we see about a 2-volt voltage drop across the LED, which causes it to illuminate. And most LEDs will draw between 20 to 50 milliamps, depending on the processes that were used to create that LED. Can you hear me okay back there? Okay. You know. And just as an LED, it's a light-emitting diode. Diodes only allow current to flow in one direction. It's a diode. Next one. So I'm going to talk about particular areas that we can put LEDs in the game. One of it's in the general illumination. Now, general illumination is typically powered by an AC voltage ranging between 5 volts and 6.3 volts. So that's across a wide variety of games. You know, your early Bali Sterns, you look at the schematics, they say that your AC voltage is actually about 5.2. Well, your Williams games, they show, the schematics are showing that's a 6.3 volt AC. You look at some of the new Stern games, they actually show it's a 5.7 volt AC. So there's a range there that has to be addressed. And then and one thing about AC voltage is that it's a waveform that crosses 0 volts. Now, this is a little image I drew, and an AC voltage, and we should all be familiar with this, it's a sinusoidal waveform. And when we say it's 6.3 volts, we're saying this is the what they call the RMS voltage. So it's not quite the peak voltage, peak is about 8.2, but the RMS is what you put on your meter. You see it in registered about 6.3 for this kind of a waveform. So when we think about what happens when we put just a straight LED in one of our lamp sockets. So we said, as I said before, the LED is only going to be conducting in, you know, in one direction. Essentially what I have is a small little circuit there, transformer out, I have the diode and a resistor in place. What ends up happening is that in this sinusoidal waveform, when it gets to about the 2 volts time frame right here, the diode starts conducting and starts illuminating. And in a sinusoidal waveform, it's at 60 hertz. It'll be on for about six milliseconds. And then the rest of the time, because it's now less than, it's in a negative voltage, only conducting in one direction, it'll be off for about 10.5 milliseconds. So we'll start seeing this strobing effect if we just put it in like this, diode and resistor, that being your socket. Okay, next slide. So what I have here is a quality LED bulb. And there are now several vendors out there. We have a vendor out there right now, CoinTaker. I mean, he's got some nice LED bulbs. A quality LED bulb is going to have some circuitry inside that bulb to make it really work well. I got this information from Chris Marquardt, CoinTaker. He actually puts a bridge rectifier in there. What a bridge rectifier does is it will take that AC voltage and create a DC voltage. Recognizable. It'll always be on the positive side. And then when you put this diode and this resistor in there, you start seeing something happening. Go to the next one. So we see with the bridge rectifier, the LED now is going to be on for about 12 milliseconds during a regular AC cycle. But we still have some off time. So it quite, you know, and so this is, we get a almost like a 120 hertz strobing effect. It's better than if we just put a regular LED in there, but we still can see that. Now, some of the games are better than others. It could be, when you see that, you know, your eyes, everybody's eyes are different. I recognize that there's a strobing effect on some of the Stern games out there when I'm playing the game. I see it like seeing the ball go across the play field with a strobe light. It's very disconcerting. A lot of people comment about that. They don't like that. It affects their gameplay. This is part of the reason why. Because you still have this small little gap that keeps coming up that the LED is turned off. Yes?
Don't you also see strobing because it occurs in the battery as well, even when it's on? You know, you don't have a DC voltage, you don't have a DC current.
Right.
So the current for the diode is changing as well, even during the on phase.
That is correct. You're absolutely correct. The but when we're talking about LEDs, most of them, you know, people are thinking, you know, they got the voltage drop across, and the current does have an effect on that. You know, when you still see some of that strobing still occurring. Can we filter this at this point? Yeah, they can add more technology in there. We can probably put in a little capacitor on the output of that bridge before allowing that diode, the LED die, and the resistor get it, so it, you know, kind of levels it out, smooths it out a little bit. That will help. But that already adds more cost to that process. And we're paying right now, coin takers sale is, you know, two LED bulbs for $1. You know, what was the last time you guys bought light bulbs? Give them what, 25, 30 cents a piece? So there's a cost difference still. It's getting better, but you still have to, you know, we have to take it, you have to balance that out. You want a regular light bulb or you want the cost, or you want an LED. Another thing about light bulbs is that we're actually operating these LEDs at about 20, 30 milliamps. Who knows how much current a 47 bulb, number 47 bulb draws? Anybody? According to the data sheets for number 47, they will draw 150 milliamps. Significant. Three to five times as much than a regular LED bulb. So you don't have the heat, you have a lot less current, you know, power requirements to run the LED bulbs. That's a big plus for, you know, when you're talking anywhere from 100 to 200 bulbs in a game. So to eliminate the strobe effect, we really need to create more of a stable DC environment. We can either create this by converting the 6.3 volt AC to DC voltage by using what's in the game itself, or there are some people that would actually say some of the games, since the GI voltage is not even used by any circuitry other than just powering the lamps. I've talked to some people that they've taken a 5-volt supply, 20-amp 5-volt supply, and they've just gone ahead and cut the wires from the transformer and wired that 5 volts into their AC, and that's taking care of it as well. So that's an alternative to make if you want to put LEDs into your GI. Some people don't like realizing their games like that. Some people do if they want to take advantage of the LEDs. Next one. So, just to recap, GI AC voltage, converting it to DC is the best way to go because LEDs operate in one direction. Regular bulbs, one thing to make note of is that regular bulbs, your incandescents, your 47s, they also work fine on DC voltage too. So if you did want to convert your bulbs or your GI circuit to DC, you don't have to worry about your incandescents if you wanted to mix them, because your incandescents will work fine on DC as well as AC. Converting to the DC voltage would work early with early Bali Stern, and also work well with their WEMS 3, System 3 through 11Cs, because they did not do any manipulation with the GI. Yes, they passed it through a relay for effects for the gameplay, but they didn't do anything like massaging it, trying to control it more in a programmatic way. And also current Stern games, you could convert your GI to DC voltage as well, because they moved away from the way WPC did. They are just taking your AC voltage, running it straight up to the board in the back box, and turning it on and off with a relay and passing the AC voltage straight down. Unlike WPC, they messed around with the TRIAC circuit that they had, tying it into some registers from the MPU board to the power driver board, and just really making it difficult to operate, to do anything with. I have not confirmed usage of DC, the DC circuitry in Gottlieb or Sega games, but I would not expect, based upon their similar architectures to a lot of the early, other games manufacturers of that era, that you wouldn't have a problem converting GI to DC level and taking advantage of LED bulbs. Next one. Another big question has been with Bali, you know, early Bali Stern games with the feature lamps. Now, I want to touch base on this one in particular because the early Bali Stern games, they handled their feature lamps differently than Williams did. Now, the basics of the circuit is simple. They have a control line that comes in and controls this SCR. Evan talked a little bit about how they were managing the in the previous seminar about the how Bali and Stern managed that. What happens is the control line asserts the signal to the anode of this SCR, and it turns this diode or this SCR on, allowing the current path to conduct, allowing the light to come on. Fairly straightforward. You got 150 milliamp lamp here, turns it on, works great. Don't see any flickering. Now, that has an issue with the LEDs. As I mentioned before, your LEDs are going to be operating about 20 to 50 milliamps. There is a particular parameter inside the SCR that says that you need to have a particular holding current that when it turns on, it'll be there. Well, in these SCRs, measured it, you need about 75 to 80 milliamps to actually get that SCR to conduct reliably. If you don't have that, you start operating in a gray region where it'll start to flicker on and off a little bit. So that's what's going to happen here. You know, when we go to the next slide, you have to have more current. And so you can do this a couple different ways. Simple solution, you can go through all your feature lamps inside these early Bali Stern games. And I'm talking games like $6 Million Man or Xenon or, you know, Sea Witch or whatever those games, you know, whatever games, there were lots of titles. Fairly easy, you can put approximately a 1K ohm resistor directly across the lamp socket. A lot of work if you want to do it. But it's effective. It will work. I've done this on my $6 Million Man, and it works just fine. A lot of people, though, are still kind of leery about working in a play field. But one of the things to keep in mind is that there were two different SCR values on the lamp driver board, and that's where that's what's controlling things. Those two SCRs have different current requirements. One requires a little bit more current than the other current. So if you know which one you need, you can adjust things if it doesn't come on. Because the age of these boards are such that anything is possible. They may not be operating under proper parameters. They may be a little bit weaker in some areas. So you may need to increase your current a little bit to turn things on. In order to do that, instead of using a 1K ohm, you might want to drop down to a 500 ohm. It'll double the amount of current that you normally put in, but still less current than an actual light bulb. And just allows you to consistently latch it in and conduct for the LEDs. Next one. Another simple solution, if you want to approach it, is you can actually make this modification instead of working under the playfield and attaching a resistor to each socket. You can actually make a modification to your lamp driver board. Essentially, it's the same thing. This being the boundary line, over here is your playfield, over here is the lamp driver board, your connector. Taking a 1K ohm resistor, attaching it to the anode of the SCR, and the other end tying it to the 5 volts. The goal being is that you want more current flow going through. You don't necessarily need to tie this, the other end of the resistor, to the lamp voltage. You got a common ground going through the system. You just need to get additional current going through the SCR to make sure it's latched in solid. Same thing applies. You may want to have to adjust your resistor value depending on your SCRs, if they're weak or if they've been modified or anything like that. But it's fairly straightforward. Now, as a note, You know, Alltech just has their ultimate lamp driver board out there. He already incorporated all this in there. And so with just a little jumper setting, you can either go with regular incandescent bulbs or you can go with LED bulbs. It's all already right in there. So that was not a plug for Alltech. That's just saying that there is a solution out there if you don't feel comfortable going in there with a soldering iron, working on your own board or underneath the play field. Next one. Next, the final thing I want, one of the final areas that I want to talk about is with the lamp matrix games. When I speak of the lamp matrix, it's like Evan said, was talking about last seminar. Williams and Data East and the newer Sterns and Sega, they're feature lamps. Okay, the feature lamps operate off of a matrix. It's a row column matrix. There are some fundamental problems with dealing with LEDs in a row column matrix because it's the software that controls how fast those LEDs or those lamps come on. In an incandescent bulb, you have the turn on and the decay time, and it glows, and it takes X amount of time. With an LED, you usually have about 15 nanoseconds to turn it on and then turn it off. A much shorter amount of time. You don't have a decay time. You don't have to take time to warm up. It's just on and off. So that's why a big part of what you see in feature lamps for the games with lamp matrices, they have this strobe effect. You don't see it with a light bulb because you have all that decay time, but you do see it with LEDs. How do we fix this? Well, that's kind of a tough time because there's no simple way to do it. I've experimented. I've tried any number of quick circuitry fixes to change the bulbs, to make the lamp sockets, timing, and think about, can I put a little bridge rectifier in here with a capacitor to hold it on a little bit more, to just kind of keep it on, keep the strobe out. The circuit doesn't work that way. The matrix doesn't work that way. I'd have to put five components in place for every feature lamp to actually get an LED to respond the same way as a light bulb in a lamp matrix. So what does this mean? Well, we have some challenges here. But I want to give you a little bit more, address some of the challenges that we may face. Okay, for the, kind of from a technical standpoint, let's take a look at the WPC lamp matrix. One of the things in working with, I've been working with Dr. Ed Chung. Most of you know him as Beaver if you play it, on RGP. He and I have been working on a couple joint projects together. And he has shared with me some of his knowledge of what he's done investigation of the WPC systems. One, the zero crossing circuit plays a major role in the strobing or the cycling through the lamp matrix. It plays a major role in the lamp matrix. That zero crossing is coming pulse is being generated back to the MPU at 120 hertz. About every 8.3 milliseconds, the MPU is getting a pulse from the zero crossing circuit. So with that pulse, every time it gets it, the system puts the data out for the row associated with column one. And then on the next pulse, it puts the data out in matrix for column two. And it just keeps cascading. And it just keeps repeating. When you do the math, a full count, column count will take about 67 milliseconds. And when you do the math in a single second, that LED will only be on about 120 milliseconds. Now, the human eye will be able to detect that it's on in 120 milliseconds. But it will also be able to detect that there is that off time. And so it just kind of blends in, and you still see this flicker going forward. And if you go over to even that, you see this even on the games out there on the floor that CoinTaker has by their booth. There's also some VCS games over there that have been tricked out with LEDs. You'll see some flickering in those feature lamps. Pretty disconcerting. Any wonder why we see the flicker? Because it's off the majority of the time. But it's happening so fast, it just seems like it's dim. And with the LEDs, when it's on, it's on. Maximum. There's no glow growing. There's no decay time. It's on or it's off. Next one. So there really isn't any simple solutions for the lamp matrix, for that lamp matrix games. Since it's controlled by the MPU, it can't be a simple mod fix. The strobing effect is actually caused by the software. Someone would have to be inside, you know, working with Stern cases, or go out and find the original software for the games themselves to address the strobing effect. So in general, it's going to be up to the aftermarket engineers such as myself, Rotten Dog, Jim Knight, anybody looking into aftermarket boards to doing some development. They will have to come up with solutions they'll work with the software and the MPUs to make that happen, to make it more LED friendly. Because it's a reality. You know, we want to make sure that keep the games going, so we add LEDs. Who likes changing bulbs all the time? I don't. Next slide. So in short summary, from a GI standpoint, obviously the best solution is converting it over to a DC level. The exceptions being WPC and Capcom. I didn't mention much about Capcom because Capcom games are all bulbs or lights in a Capcom are computer controlled, or are they controlled by the MPU. Even what we would GI lights are all controlled by the MPU directly. And they are more set up as a lamp matrix where they're turning everything on. So you'd have to go into the software to increase the strobe rate to make it ready for LEDs. Early Bali Stern feature lamps require a resistor to reliably turn on the SCR, resistor in parallel with the lamp. There are a couple different ways to do it. You can put a resistor across the socket, you can put a resistor on the board from the anode to the VCC, or if you wanted to look at the aftermarket products out there, Altec has theirs. Jim Knight of Rotten Dog says he's going to have one out in 5 to 6 months that's supposed to be LED friendly. You could wait for those if you want to invest the money in that. And then as far as lamp matrix games, they will need aftermarket help or someone willing to go in and rewrite software. That's about the only solution out there to eliminate those flickers. So are there any questions? Sure.
Last year when I saw a game using LEDs, maybe the wrong rates, one of the issues appeared to be what I would call leak-proof, in that lamps, plate fill inserts that were supposed to be off were slightly on.
That's right. That effect is a result because on the driver board that controls the lamp matrix, what it is that you have to turn, you know, to control the lamp matrix, you have two sets of transistors. One will turn on the column voltage, and one will turn on the so they're all working there in concert. On the driver boards themselves, those transistors are slightly biased on. So they're turned on just barely enough to allow some leakage current. And that leakage current is, you know, in the area of 10, 15 milliamps, which is enough to turn on an LED, but not enough to see any noticeable effect in a light bulb. There's still current flowing through that bulb, but it's so minimal, it's not enough to heat up the element to turn it on. And that's the effect that you're seeing right there. Now, yes, and one of the reasons why I brought out aftermarket boards is because aftermarket boards will have to address that leakage as well. They can't use the same circuitry. I'll be honest with you, I'm working on a driver board, on my own driver board, as an aftermarket for the WPC era. And I'm using different technology. I'm not using Darlington FET transistor, Darlington pair transistors. I'm using FET technology. It's either going to be on or it's going to be off.
I saw the bleed through on the Spider-Man that he had, that the point maker has.
Right. Because that particular one actually has, if I remember correctly, there was a second revision of the board where they adjusted some biasing. They have adjusted some biasing resistors to not turn it on so much. A big part of it is still going to be the technology out there. What is the manufacturer using?
You're saying it's a later revision of the spare board.
Yes. But that bleed through does happen. Kim?
Yeah, that's my spider. There's a
leak. Right. They adjusted some of the component values to minimize that. Because I'm not saying that I know everything about what's going on in Stern, but Gary Stern cannot be so uninformed not to realize that more and more people are going to LEDs. It's cheap for them to do the incandescents. Put incandescent bulbs in, new end box. But looking down the road, I mean, heck, what is it? Not too long ago, I thought I heard Gary say that about 40% of the market for pinball is actually going in new end box home use.
Is this cost the reason why you won't do it?
For what? For LEDs? Probably cost is a big part of it. But not
everything
just...
Everything to him is cost.
Everything is to him is cost. But also keep in mind how much cost it's going to take to truly redesign the software as well as the hardware to run LEDs. I mean, they're going to have to cycle through the lamp matrix much faster. They're going to have to adjust the hardware more to make sure that it's either on or off, and not looking at so much as transistor arrays where you have to turn things slightly on. There's a lot of redesign cost there is. And that's why I mentioned that's going to probably be the responsibility of the aftermarket board designers, such as myself and Jim and anybody else that wants to get into the market, to look very closely at it. Will I do it on aftermarket Stern design, for their existing, for like Spider-Man or those driver boards? I may. If there's a demand for it and people really want to move away from incandescence, yeah, it'd be worth my time.
Do you have any pages of software? Can you ever finish that?
No, I can only fix the problems that we're in it to begin with through hardware. I mean, there's only so much you can do.
I'll never finish. Yes, the upgrades, I'll never finish up on them.
Yeah, I don't know. But me personally, I'm an older Williams guy. I like the System 11 stuff. I don't have any Sterns. Yes?
I've got a 12 ISO, and I've just done the bypass with LEDs.
Right.
And GI light.
Right.
If I use the computer switching supply, use the 5 volts off it.
Your WPC games with regard to the GI lights, they ran through those triacs. There's a group of heat sinks there in the bottom left corner of your power driver board. They get really hot, triac switching circuits. And running straight DC through them is not the best bet. You can, but you're probably going to lose a lot of effect with it. They count on the fact that they're running it through the AC. If you go a little bit deeper into the circuit and to actually talk to some of the designers why they put it there, Williams was really trying to experiment to get more into the various effects, game modes, to turn certain sections of the GI on and off. Because there's a whole set of circuitry in front of those triacs to do that. It's easy. using the using AC voltage, it's easy to deal with. You know, if they had to go to DC, then they're looking at more capacitors, more components, and trying to adjust it that way. And I would not, one of the things, I wouldn't be putting DC through all the triacs. I'm not. My particular driver board that I'm designing, I take that into account, and I'm actually just converting all my DC, for the GI, and handling it that way.
So you talk about the different vendors, LED bulbs. Can you explain the difference between some of them, what you're selling?
I'm not selling any LED bulbs. There's okay, LED bulbs, they've got a couple different types out there. Big part of it is if the vendor is doing their homework, they're going to spend a lot of time working with their supplier to get the right coloring, get the right matches, don't want too much blue, too much green, just wanting to get a nice color for you. There are some vendors out there that are providing what I call polarized bulb. Polarized bulbs are ones that do not use a bridge rectifier in the bulb. They have a single diode that rectify it halfway, and that if you're not careful, you have to rotate the bulb. If it's a wedge base, you have to flip the bulb around to get it to work right. But from a quality standpoint, the vendors that I've dealt with, Cointaker and BCS, I've just recently been curious, and I've actually purchased some bulbs from Terry and Pinball Life. I was going to take a look at those. But quality vendors are creating bulbs with full bridge rectification in them, putting sufficient resistance in line with their LED dye so that they don't burn up the dye with excess amounts of current. They current limit it because even though the LED is going to drop 2 volts, you're still talking, 5 volts here possibly in the total. So he has to eat up that 3 volts someplace. You have to do it through a resistor. If you put the 5 volts across, you might run into a lifespan issue in the LED bulbs. I'm not plugging any LED vendors. Yes?
It's almost a silly question, but all of the techniques to get these to work right involve either diodes or resistors, or slightly capacitive maybe. Did anybody ever fool around with using LEDs as the bridge and have them all shine and so at any given time through open or going or something like that?
What you end up happening, remember, LEDs conduct in one direction. You could put them in parallel, inverse parallel, but your effect, you end up more with a clipping circuit, and so you're not going to get the full range effect, because you might actually end up hitting a reverse voltage problem. It just really does depend. It really does depend on the LED design itself.
Would it be possible, given what you said about the Bally's, the WPC not working with DC through the triacs, to create a board that plugs into the GI outputs, that does the conversion from AC to DC, and then you plug the connectors onto that? Just rectifies and smooths.
Yes, I've been asked not to do any self-promotion. I actually do have a board that would do that. I haven't put it into production yet.
I didn't know that.
It's not in production yet. We're still doing some testing. I've tried it in my Bride of Pinbot, and it still needs a little bit of work. It does work, but I still need to do some adjustments with it. And again, we also have to address the fact that there's cabling that would have to be addressed, because you have the GI, you have to be able to tie into the plug-in. It still doesn't overall, it would. It does reduce the overall heat content if you wanted to keep the the SCRs. The best thing to do, in my case, I have done a lot with it. It's because I've been putting a lot of my stuff actually on my power driver board rather than taking it off board, because you just get into a real messy inside the back box. Just try to keep everything as low.
Sometimes in the future, if you go through that board at Marco.com or no longer with Marco.com?
As far as Jim Knight? I'm with Marco. They're my master distributor, Pensport's master distributor.
Is that a board you're developing through Marco or something?
Well, he's given me some ideas. I'm still doing all the development work. but they will carry it when it's done, as well as with all the all the other distributors that I have. We have several distributors throughout the country, as well as overseas, Canada. So, just moving forward. I'm hoping to have that board out by the middle of summer. It's just the power driver board itself goes into so many different games. I want to make sure I've tested it in as many games as possible before releasing it. I want to make sure I'm very confident in handling all issues. Anything else? All right, thank you for your time. Let's go play some pinball.